Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. In a case that could have major ramifications for your water bill and for conservation efforts, a California appellate court has struck down tiered water rates as unconstitutional. We'll have details on today's show. We'll also have information about terror arrests announced over the weekend, including two suspects taken into custody right here in San Diego for trying to join Islamic State forces. And then on our sports report, we'll tell you about a local pitcher who pitched a perfect game and hit a home run last week. And she plays for a high school right here in East County. You go, girl! A new scientific study concludes that the Ventura earthquake fault could produce a megaquake as well as a tsunami. And a tsunami is something that scientists previously thought was impossible for a Southern California earthquake fault to produce. Hear about a sales tax rollback in El Cajon and some highway repairs that will impact traffic on Highway 67 coming up. Our newsmaker interview today is with Ashley Mazanek from the San Diego Energy District Foundation, and she'll tell us the latest on efforts to give local communities a choice on where to purchase electric power. Two more birds have died from West Nile virus in our county, a disease that can be transmitted to humans and is potentially fatal. We'll have details on the locations and what you can do to protect yourself. Also hear about a new effort to save bees from pesticides and some good news about California's measles outbreak. We'll also have news today about the latest group that's working to gain civil rights protections, atheists, who face discriminatory laws in some states, as well as in many foreign countries, including some where a lack of belief in God can actually be punishable by death. On our Capitol report, hear about efforts by Congress to repeal the inheritance tax. And finally, on Sounds of History, we'll share our interview with Ken Woodward, curator of the Guy B. Woodward Museum in Ramona, a veritable treasure trove of knowledge about our region's colorful past. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. California's 4th District Court of Appeal has struck down tiered water rates in San Juan Capistrano, finding it unconstitutional to charge large water users a higher rate per gallon than low water users. The ruling has implications statewide, though it leaves open the possibility of upholding some tiered rate structures elsewhere, but only if the charges are not more than the actual costs. The case was filed by property owners in San Juan Capistrano, but the court ruled that Capistrano's tiered rate structure violates Proposition 218, which prohibits government agencies from charging more than the actual cost of services it delivers, including water delivery, the court held. Some ratepayers in Capistrano were being charged more than four times higher per unit of water than other ratepayers. Governor Jerry Brown criticized the decision, saying the court's ruling effectively puts a straitjacket on local government. Tiered rates have been utilized by many water agencies statewide, including agencies in San Diego and East County, as a means of encouraging water conservation. The Los Angeles Times reports that state attorneys are considering appealing the ruling. An estimated 66% to 80% of all water agencies in the state use some form of tiered rates. The governor has ordered a mandatory 25% cut in water use statewide as California enters its fourth year of a historic drought, after voluntary cuts failed to reduce water usage enough. But enforcement in areas such as the city of San Diego have been lax, despite penalties on the books for those who violate limits on things like which days irrigation is allowed and other rules. In San Diego County, some water agencies will soon feel the pinch more and others less under revised rules just issued by the State Water Resources Control Board. Hardest hit locally with mandatory 36% reductions will be the Fallbrook, Rainbow, Olivenhine, Santa Fe, and Valley Center water districts in North County. The lowest reduction will be in the Sweetwater Authority, followed by San Diego and Otay water districts at 16%. Among water districts serving East County, the mandatory cuts are 24% for Lakeside and Vallecitos, 28% for Padre Dam, and 28% for Ramona's Municipal Water District. Poway faces a 32% cut and Escondido 20%. Tiered rates are unpopular with large property owners who have argued that making water too costly could force some to let trees and landscaping die, increasing fire danger. But some experts predict California could run out of water in a year if the drought doesn't end. So absent enforcement of water use limitations, lowering water rates for heavy water users could result in even more water used, just the opposite of the conservation that all experts agree is needed. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
The FBI and the United States Attorney's Office in Minnesota have announced that six Somali-American men have been charged with conspiracy to support a terrorism organization, including two who were arrested in San Diego. The six men, all from Minnesota, were allegedly trying to travel to Syria to join Islamic State forces, also known as ISIS or ISIL. The two men arrested in San Diego were Mohammed Abihamid Farah, a U.S. citizen, and Abraham Yassin Daoud, a Somali citizen and permanent legal resident in the United States. Both men are 21 years old. According to the federal complaint, the two men planned to obtain forged passports, then travel through Mexico to ultimately reach Syria. Federal authorities were tipped off by a confidential informant who initially planned to also join ISIS but changed his mind. An undercover FBI agent posed as a provider of false passports and also offered to buy Daoud's vehicle to finance his travel expenses. In a press conference, U.S. Attorney Andy Lugar called the defendants focused men who were intent on joining a terrorist organization. He added, as described in the criminal complaint, these men worked over the course of the last 10 months to join ISIL. Even when their co-conspirators were caught and charged, they continued to seek new and creative ways to leave Minnesota to fight for a terror group. Minneapolis and San Diego have the two largest populations of Somali Americans in the United States. This is not the first time Somalis from Minnesota have traveled to San Diego seeking to join foreign terrorist fighters. In 2009, four Somali men drove from Minneapolis to San Diego, entered Mexico, and then traveled overseas to fight with Al-Shabaab Islamic terrorists in Somalia. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Ed Barreno with a sports report. Move over, Babe Ruth. There's a new pitcher slugger on the mound. Hannah Bowen, a sophomore at Ramona High School and pitcher for the Bulldogs, is one tough competitor. She recovered from a back injury to smack a two-run homer in the league opener, helping lead her team to a 14-2 victory against Oceanside on April 14th. The game ended after five innings due to the league's mercy rule, which ends a game after one team has dominated the other by 10 runs or more, the Ramona Sentinel reports. So how do you top that feat? On April 16th, squaring off against Mission Vista High School, Bowen pitched a perfect game, keeping Mission Vista from hitting, scoring, or even reaching base. The Bulldogs sailed to a 2-0 win. No pressure, though. Bowen reportedly didn't realize she'd pitched a perfect game until other players congratulated her afterwards. The team's final game before league play was on April 13th, when Bowen pitched a complete game against Westview, allowing just 5 hits. She also batted .500, going 2-for-4 at the plate. Bulldogs coach Corey McDonald called the team's latest victory a huge win. As for Bowen, he says, it's nice to have her back in the full swing of things now.
Scientists studying the Ventura Fault north of Los Angeles have concluded the fault line is more dangerous than previously thought. Now, seismologists have concluded the Ventura Fault could produce a quake measuring 8.0 on the Richter scale, along with a tsunami capable of inundating coastal areas of Southern California, affecting hundreds of miles, potentially. Tsunamis were previously believed to be impossible from a quake originating in Southern California, since the San Andreas and other faults in the region are too far inland to impact the oceans. While a major quake in Alaska could cause a tsunami to reach California, residents would have hours to evacuate, and it would be mostly Northern California impacted. But if a megaquake strikes the Ventura Fault, there could be very little warning time before a monster wave would hit the shore. That's troubling for residents, and also a serious concern should a tsunami sweep over stored radioactive waste at nuclear reactor sites on the coast. Geologists have found evidence that a major quake has occurred in the Ventura area about 800 years ago, the Los Angeles Times reports. The research on the Ventura Fault was done by scientists from San Diego State University, USC, Harvard University, and the U.S. Geological Survey. Scientists used underground oil data, earth imaging technology, and research on ancient beach mapping in the study. They created an image of the fault using a seismic reflection technique.
Researchers found the fault is deeper than originally believed. They also learned that the fault is connected to a network of other fault lines. So if a major quake strikes Ventura, it could trigger a megaquake, rattling fault lines in neighboring Los Angeles and San Bernardino counties, too. So how big is a megaquake? A megaquake along this fault system would produce 32 to 120 times more energy than the devastating 6.7 Northridge quake back in 1994, the scientists say. Shaking could last up to 3 minutes, and power from a megaquake can be so intense that soil can liquefy, causing trees to be sucked down or fall over. The world's largest tsunami wave, by the way, struck Lituya Bay, Alaska in 1958, measuring a staggering 1,720 feet high, sweeping over islands and uprooting millions of trees along with 40 million cubic yards of rock. That 9.2 earthquake that caused it was the second strongest ever recorded on Earth. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This month, El Cajon became the only city in California to reduce its sales tax at a time when 43 other cities and counties across the state have renewed or raised their sales tax rates. El Cajon has rolled back its sales tax from 9% to 8.5% due to the sunsetting of Proposition O, a temporary sales tax that helped build public safety facilities and more. Mayor Bill Wells says it's now time to put money back in the hands of taxpayers. Taxpayers will save an estimated $8.6 million a year, an average of $245 per household, the city estimates. City officials joined with the East County Chamber of Commerce, Parkway Plaza, and Valley of Cars to host a rollback tax event on April 15th. Eric Lund, general manager of the East County Chamber of Commerce, says this is an important step for El Cajon business owners, residents, and visitors. He added, the sales tax decrease in El Cajon means business owners are competitive with other cities in San Diego County, and consumers are keeping more money in their pockets. For example, when El Cajon residents visit the Valley of Cars, they'll pay less for a car than they did before. Proposition O was passed by voters in 2004 as a 0.5% sales tax for 10 years. After the past decade, the city built a brand new public safety facility and a new fire station. The city also made significant upgrades to 3 remaining fire stations in the city and has a brand new animal shelter planned to be built in 2016 with the remaining funds. Mayor Wells concludes, the city of El Cajon is a better, safer place today than it was 10 years ago. Much has been accomplished, and it wouldn't have been possible without the support from the El Cajon citizens, the business community, and city council. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
A project to rehabilitate the pavement on the main lanes, shoulders, and ramps on State Route 67 from I-8 to the San Diego River Bridge north of Mapleview Street is scheduled to begin Monday. The work will also include installation of a new guardrail and concrete barrier. California Highway Patrol advises that travelers can expect to see construction signs placed in advance of the work. The initial work will be to replace and install the new guardrail. Construction work requiring nighttime lane closures is expected to begin in May. Motorists are advised to slow and move over a lane when safe to do so whenever highway workers are present with flashing amber lights on their vehicles. It's the law. For information about highway construction and maintenance closures, as well as other information related to transportation in San Diego and Imperial counties, please follow SD Caltrans on Twitter. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio here in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is Ashley Mazanik, and she is the membership manager at the San Diego Energy District. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
So I understand that the San Diego Energy District is a community choice energy entity, a nonprofit that's getting ready here to give people an alternative to buying their power from SDG&E. Can you tell us a little bit about what community choice is all about?
Absolutely. The mission of the San Diego Energy District Foundation is to accelerate the transition to a clean energy economy through renewable, locally generated electricity in San Diego County, Southern California, and all local communities.
Very good. So that means things like rooftop solar and locally produced power instead of power lines to nowhere out there pumping in often fossil fuels from outside of the region.
Absolutely. It would give us a choice in where our energy comes from.
Very good. Now, I understand that you've just begun offering memberships in this to really make this happen. How is the membership drive going, and how many members do you have so far?
Well, we began our campaign actually in March, and I just came on board as the new membership manager. And in the last month, we've had about a dozen businesses come on board, and we're starting to build a constituency to speak on behalf of so we can build more and more momentum towards choice.
What are the benefits to ratepayers if they are able to establish a community choice energy outfit in their community?
Ratepayers will enjoy lower rates and also choice where their energy comes from and overall a more democratic energy supply.
How do San Diego's rates compare to the rest of the country?
San Diego electricity rates are among the highest in the U.S. and actually expected to increase. At the same time, a large group of customers would like the choice to buy actually more renewable power locally. So choice is the logical solution.
Okay. Now, you are reaching out on a community-by-community basis, I understand. Tell us what progress you're making in that regard. Which communities are poised to come on board to be the first in our region, maybe, to become community choice cities or counties?
Well, Solana Beach has passed the resolution to go ahead and move forward and have a feasibility study conducted. San Diego City has their feasibility study underway to assess the economic benefits of community choice energy, also known as CCE or CCA. The San Diego Energy District is building momentum to follow the likes of Marin County, Lancaster, and Sonoma, in forming a nonprofit community choice entity. But we are looking to gain support both legislatively and financially in order to successfully advocate for community choice.
How does this work? If the city of San Diego or the city of La Mesa or El Cajon or Lemon Grove or anybody else decides they want to do community choice energy, does that mean that their consumers or their residents would choose which entity they want, you guys or SDG&E, or does it mean that they would automatically become customers of the community choice program as has been done in Marin and some other places unless they choose to opt out and go back to SDG&E?
Mm-hmm. If a community decides that it wants to go ahead and move forward with community choice, they will have more democratic say in their smaller communities to where their choice comes from or where their electricity comes from.
Okay, so if one city wanted to say, hey, we're going to keep you with SDG&E unless you actively, you know, take action here to say you want to go into the community choice, they could. And if somebody else says, no, we're going to move everybody in our city into the community choice unless they choose to check off a box and say, no, keep me with SDG&E. That's really a choice that's up to each community to make on its own?
Absolutely. It's up to the communities. It's actually up to the individuals. It's up to businesses. You will always have the option to stay with SDG&E if for some reason community choice is not something that you're interested in.
Okay. Well, that sounds really good. Have you had conversations with the supervisors, or for that matter, with any of the local cities yet out here in East County?
Educational conversations and presentations have taken place in Santee, La Mesa, and El Cajon. It's important to note that energy choice is a nonpartisan issue. It's an economic issue because as clean local renewable generation continues to go down in price, communities are more and more likely to save money and get greener electricity. So we're actually looking to gain momentum and actually help to educate the public here at the San Diego Energy District to introduce choice into the market monopoly so that San Diegans can adapt to rate changes and the increasing demand for renewables.
Now, we've talked a lot about the benefits to the consumer, the benefit to the business that signs up for this. What are the benefits to a city? Let's say if El Cajon or Lemon Grove or La Mesa wanted to become community choice. Are there some economic benefits for the city itself?
Absolutely. As we see our rates increase, when you have more choice in the community, you have the ability to decide not only what the electricity profile looks like, but if there is significant money saved or, you know, excess funds at the end of the year, you can invest it in local renewable projects. You can invest it really however your community sees fit. So not only will you save money in the short term? But in the long term, that money can stay in the community and you can actually develop new projects as you see fit.
There you go. And I would imagine that if a city or a business or an individual wants to also make money selling surplus energy back to your grid, that they could do that as well. Is that right? If, let's say if you're producing more solar than you can use, for instance.
Right. Absolutely. The communities themselves will be the ones deciding exactly how to incorporate, you know, the different sources of electricity in a given community. But if you want to find out more about maybe what's going on in your specific community, you could certainly email me at webmaster@sandiegoenergydistrict.org or otherwise visit our website, sandiegoenergydistrict.org, for more information.
Now, we've talked about cities and the county. What about other types of entities such as a Native American tribe with its own reservation or a school district, something like that? Can they join the community choice aggregate?
Absolutely. Anyone can join. We have Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 membership. Tier 1 is typically individuals and small businesses. Tier 2, non-government organizations, nonprofits, medium-sized businesses. And Tier 3, we have our larger businesses who have actually a lot of political sway. And we're very excited to have some big Tier 3 businesses on board that...
But let's name them. What are a few of the businesses that have signed up so far?
Off the top of my head, I know we have Noble Gas has joined on. We also have Commonwealth Edison, Direct Energy, and even Shell, actually.
Shell Oil, interesting. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. What else would you like our listeners to know about the San Diego Energy District Foundation and the new Community Choice Energy Program that you're working on getting off the ground?
The main thing to remember is that energy choice introduces competition and choice into the market monopoly so San Diegans can swiftly adapt to rate changes and to the increasing demand for renewable power. We are looking to get as many members as possible because if we're able to show that a community is supportive of energy choice, then we can advocate on the behalf of citizens and on behalf of businesses in order to get the legislative power that we need to move forward and take control of our energy supply.
Very good. And one other point worth making out here in East County is that by supporting power that's produced in the communities itself, let's say San Diego getting its power from within the city of San Diego or Lemon Grove getting its power from within Lemon Grove, that means that in the future there would be less need for more and more power lines. And we all know that with some of these wildfires, it was a 5-year period there where 160-something fires were found to be caused by power lines in our region, according to the California Public Utilities Commission. So it's actually reducing fire risk. Is that a fair statement?
Since fire is such a difficult challenge in the San Diego area, I know 2/5 of our budget goes to fighting fires. If communities elect to make those types of changes, I think that would be wonderful to be able to, you know, incorporate fire prevention into the way that we think about our electricity and build.
Very good. Listeners, if you've just tuned in, we've been speaking today with Ashley Mazanik, who is the San Diego Energy District Membership Director, and they're all about community choice, giving communities and people in the San Diego region a choice of where to buy your electric power. You can get more information about that at sandiegoenergydistrict.org. Ashley, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you for having me, Miriam.
Save the bees. That's the battle cry in two ongoing court cases in California where beekeepers and environmental groups are fighting regulators over the use of pesticides they contend harm bees and crops. On Tuesday, on behalf of the groups, the law firm Earth Justice asked a federal judge in San Francisco to make the EPA take a second look at a pesticide called sulfoxaflor. Lead attorney Greg Laurie says this is the first case beekeepers have brought against the agency for failing to protect honeybees from toxic pesticides.
It's gotten to the point where beekeepers are losing so many bees each year that they simply can't stay in business. At the rate we're going, we're really on the short path to agricultural disaster.
Last week, Earth Justice asked a state court in Alameda to force the California Department of Pesticide Regulation to stop approving the use of a class of pesticides called neonicotinoids until the department finishes a multi-year review of the impacts on honeybees. Groups opposed to and in favor of pesticide use both cite studies they say prove their respective points. Pesticide manufacturers blame the bee deaths on a combination of causes, including disease and predators. But no matter what the cause, Paul Towers of the Pesticide Action Network says the stakes are high.
We know that bees are responsible for 1 in 3 bites of food we eat. So we need to take every step we can to ensure their continued safety and protection.
California's state review of neonicotinoids began in 2009, and Towers says that's long enough to take some meaningful action to protect bees. The bees play a beneficial role in many farm crops, but at greatest risk in California is the $3 billion almond crop, which is entirely dependent on bees for pollination. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes our own Spanish Fiesta in Ramona to benefit East County Magazine, as well as Cuyamaca College's Spring Garden Festival and the East County Garden Tour.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including music, Western Days, and Mother's Day events.
So stay tuned for all of these events and more.
Southern Indian Health Council invites you to the 9th Annual Spring Gathering in Alpine, Saturday, April 25th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Come for a day of food, entertainment, kids' activity corner, vendors, tables, and raffle. The Sexual Assault Prevention 1 Mile Walk will begin with registration at 9 a.m. For more information, go to SIHC.org.
Like honeybees to a hive, the public swarms Cuyamaca College and Rancho San Diego each year for its immensely popular Spring Garden Festival. This year, the 22nd annual free event takes place on Saturday, April 25th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. From urban farming to water-conserving landscaping ideas, the festival is the place to go to learn about sustainability. This event showcases the college's ornamental horticulture program as well as the water conservation garden and heritage of the America's Museum on campus. Over 50 vendors, craftspeople, and artisans will be present. In addition, activities, exhibits, tours, and demonstrations of sustainable gardening and landscaping will be offered. For information, visit cuyamaca.edu and click on events.
Friends of East County will host a garden tour on Saturday, April 25th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The tour features 5 gardens with an amazing variety of settings, including water-wise gardens, themed gardens, flowering plants, including a 1-acre rose garden, and vendors offering crafts and garden creations. Friends of East County Arts, Inc. is a nonprofit philanthropic organization that supports the performing and fine arts in East County. For garden tour tickets, visit friendsofecarts.org.
East County Magazine invites you to attend our Spanish Fiesta on Sunday, April 26th from 12 to 2 p.m. at Hacienda de las Rosas Winery in Ramona. Proceeds will benefit our nonprofit news reporting and wildfire alerts. Guests will also enjoy guitar music, wine tasting, foods from Jeremy's on the Hill, and Grove Pastry Shop, an equestrian demonstration with Jorge Valenzuela and the Peruvian Paso Horses, a silent auction, and opportunity drawings. For tickets and details, visit eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
Cone Classic Cruises is celebrating Cinco de Mayo on Wednesday, April 29th from 5 to 8 p.m. on Main Street in downtown El Cajon. For more information, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The 9th annual Campo Lake Moreno Roundup is set for Saturday, May 2nd at the Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility in Campo. Gates open at 7 a.m. with opening ceremonies at 9 a.m. and presentation of this year's Grand Marshal at 10 a.m. Guests are welcome to wear period costumes. You can enjoy a day in the country and witness how cowboys ride, rope, and brand cattle in the ranch branding competition. Watch or try your luck in the Gene Martinez Memorial Horseshoe Tournament. And an all-day gymkhana for kids and adults will also take place. That's games on horseback. There will also be a Miss Roundup pageant, relay races, three-legged races, tug-of-war, roping, and hula hoop contest. Gunfight skits will be hosted by the Hole-in-the-Wall Gang with special guest the Gaskells, who will reenact the famous Campbell gunfight of 1875. There is also a mutton-busting competition for kids under 50 pounds, as well as a stick horse race. The Campo Locket event and equestrian facility is located in Campo on the old Camp Locket Army base. For more information, you can visit campo.org/roundup.
The 18th Annual Sage and Songbirds Garden Tour on May 1st through the 3rd will feature 5 private home gardens, plus a hummingbird haven and a raptor rehabilitation facility for close-up viewing of wildlife. The tour includes water-wise plants such as succulents and native plants from Australia, the Mediterranean, and California, as well as garden-related vendors, plant sales, music, live butterfly releases, plus cruising critters, reptiles, and insects. For tickets and a schedule, visit chirp.org.
The second annual Incapa Classic Desert Concert will be held on May 2nd. This outdoor high desert concert will be held at the Desert View Tower, a state historical monument perched on a rocky hillside overlooking the Anza Borrego Desert. The Incapa offers music lovers and naturalists alike a chance to experience an overnight event featuring multiple bands within our southwest region. For tickets and details, visit incapa2brownpapertickets.com.
You're invited to have a howling good time at the Coyote Music Festival at Queen Mecca College on Sunday, May 2nd from 12 to 4 p.m. 6 homegrown bands playing an eclectic mix of folk, jazz, and rock will perform on 2 stages on the grand lawn of the Queen Mecca College at the Coyote Music Festival, noon to 4 p.m. Saturday, May 2nd. Now in its 7th year, the entirely student-run festival will provide the community a free afternoon of live music by local talent in a family-friendly venue where picnic baskets and lawn chairs are the best seats in the house. For students enrolled in the music industry studies, the festival represents a term project, the culmination of a semester's work, learning every aspect of putting on a big music event, preparing for careers in the music industry, along with the music vendors selling jewelry, kettle corn, and more, will be a part of the festival. For details, see Cuyamaca at edu.
Cafe Murder will be presented by Circle Players of East County, a new community theater group, May 1st through May 3rd at Richardson Hall in El Cajon. This fun murder mystery comedy is for all ages. The leading character, who is allergic to water, is celebrating her birthday at a restaurant with her sisters. The birthday girl disappears and presumed murdered. Everyone has a motive and everyone is a suspect. Was it one of Rosemary's sisters? Or the self-taught detective, or the passionate French chef. The only witnesses in the restaurant are the audience members who get involved by casting their vote. The Circle Players is part of the First Presbyterian Church of El Cajon's Neighbor to Neighbor program, established as a drama theater outreach to the East County. Reservations are required. For information on showtimes or tickets, visit firstpress-elcajon.org.
The San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present 2 for the show on Sunday, May 3rd at 3 p.m. at College Avenue Baptist Church. The concert features 2 major choral works, Giacchino's Rossini's Stabat Mater and John Reuter's Feel the Spirit. For tickets, visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
The 25th annual Vintage Alpine will be held on Sunday, May 3rd from 1 until 4 p.m. at Summers Pass Farms in Flint Springs. Vintage Alpine will feature tastings of 40 wines plus food from fine restaurants across our region. This event attracts over 500 people annually, and all proceeds benefit services and programs for the children of San Diego. Vintage Alpine, a wine experience in the country, is presented by the Kiwanis Club of Alpine Foundation. This event is limited to persons 21 years of age and up. Tickets can be reserved at vintagealpine.org.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College in Rancho San Diego hosts its annual Butterfly Festival on Saturday, May 9th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Activities include tours of a butterfly pavilion and butterfly discovery lab, workshops, Miss Metamorphosis for kids, live music, food, crafts, and jewelry by local artisans. Children are encouraged to dress as a caterpillar or their favorite winged pollinator for the pollinator party at 11:30 a.m. For more information, visit thegarden.org/butterfly.
Ramona Western Days, a living history, encampments, and gunfighter skit competition will be held Saturday, May 9th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sunday, May 10th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Ramona Rodeo Grounds in Ramona. Hosted by Ramona Old West Days and Guns of the Round Table, the encampments will feature people representing the conditions people endured in the 1800s, including mountain men, pioneers, Civil War soldiers, and cowboys. New this year is a gunfighter skit competition on Saturday and Sunday, showcasing comedies, dramas, melodramas, history, and more. For details, contact Ramona Old West Days at gmail.com.
Grant James Vineyard in Ramona will be celebrating Mother's Day on May 9th and 10th with flowers and chocolates for every mom. For more information, visit vineyardgrantjames.com.
America on Main Street, a fun-filled family event, is being held this year on Saturday, May 16th in the downtown El Cajon area, beginning at 8 a.m. and lasting until 8 p.m. Admission is free, as are miniature pony rides, a kid-friendly petting zoo, large Ferris wheel, and varieties of games and crafts for the children. There will also be four different stages featuring live entertainment and music for your listening pleasure. For details, visit AmericaOnMainStreet.org.
Keys Creek Lavender Farm in Valley Center will host a Mother's Day brunch on Sunday, May 10th at 12 noon, featuring a menu that includes lavender delicacies, a tour, lavender water, and a lavender sugar scrub for mom. For tickets and details, visit kclffarm.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The California Department of Public Health on Friday declared the measles outbreak officially over. The outbreak, which began at Disneyland, infected 131 people in California, including 14 in San Diego County. The Disneyland outbreak also spread to other states, causing 142 cases in seven states from late December to early March. There have been no new cases confirmed in California since March 2nd. Most of the cases in California and across the nation occurred in people who did not get vaccinated. The measles vaccine is 97% effective if both doses are received. Due to a rise in children who have not been vaccinated, the County of San Diego recently changed its policy to require that if a parent seeks a personal belief exemption from vaccination requirements for their children, the form must be signed by a healthcare professional as well as the parent or guardian. The state legislature is considering a bill that would eliminate the personal belief exemption, requiring that all children receive vaccinations unless there is a documented health condition, such as an allergy to an ingredient in a vaccine, or certain underlying health conditions. For East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson with the Health Report.
Madison, Wisconsin has just become the first city in the nation to give legal protections to atheists in housing, employment, and public accommodations. Despite gains made for civil rights for minorities, women, and gays, atheists who claim no religious beliefs continue to face discrimination across the United States in politics, education, military service, and more, Christian Science Monitor reports.
8 states have laws that actually prohibit atheists from holding public office, according to the Washington Post. Even the U.S. military classifies lack or loss of spiritual faith as a risk factor for suicide, a criteria that some contend is discriminatory and unconstitutional. Negative views of atheists are widely held, however. A Pew Research poll in 2014 found that 53% of Americans surveyed said it is necessary to believe in God to be moral, and 40% admitted to having negative views of atheists. But conversely, a lack of religious affiliation is actually on the rise in America. Pew Research found that 7% of those surveyed said they do not believe in God or universal spirit, and 20% said they are not affiliated with any religion in a 2012 survey, up from 15% 5 years earlier. In 2012, the American Humanist Association sent a report to the U.S. State Department documenting discrimination against atheists worldwide. This includes countries that allow atheists to have citizenship revoked, refuse their passports, or prohibit them from marrying. In addition, atheists may be put to death for their non-beliefs in Afghanistan, Iran, the Maldives, Mauritania, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and the Sudan. Those policies would have denied the world some of its most creative minds, including these famous atheists: inventor Thomas Edison, rock star John Lennon, physicist Albert Einstein, Apple Computer's co-founder Steve Wozniak, actress Katharine Hepburn, architect Frank Lloyd Wright, artist Pablo Picasso and Vincent van Gogh, humorist Mark Twain, pianist Arthur Rubinstein, women's rights advocate Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with the Capitol Report. This week, when most of us paid our taxes due on April 15th, the Republican majority in Congress is trying to push through H.R. 1105, a bill that would repeal the estate tax for millionaires and billionaires. The estate tax law has already been reformed so that only households with a net worth of $5.4 million, the top 0.2%, even pay the estate tax at all. If H.R. 1105 passes, no one will pay it. Backers claim eliminating the estate tax would spur investment in the economy, though there is no guarantee that wealthy heirs would use their inherited fortunes to start companies or hire workers. At a time of widening income inequality between the top income earners and the vast majority of Americans, this tax break would cost our nation $270 billion in revenues over the next 10 years. The effort to repeal the estate tax comes at the same time that the GOP Congress is seeking to cut Social Security, Medicare, and other programs that will benefit poor and elderly Americans.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, guest hosting The Sounds of History, recording on the road today in Ramona. We are at the Guy B. Woodward Museum in Ramona, which is a marvelous place, and it is my great pleasure today to introduce our special guest, Ken Woodward, who is the curator of the museum. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here.
Now, I understand that your own family has long roots in Ramona. Tell us a little bit about your own family history first, and then we'll talk about the museum.
Yes, my family came out of Kellogg, Iowa. They came to Ramona in 1896, and the whole family, aunts, uncles, grandfather, grandmother, kids, girlfriends, the whole group. Two of them, they were actually farmers and dairymen out of Kellogg, Iowa.
And so what brought them to California, and how did they get here?
Well, they had lived in Iowa for many, many years, and they were just simply getting tired of the harsh winters and trying to take care of their farms and cattle. And so the whole family just packed up and came westward. That was my great-grandfather and all of his brothers and sisters.
Now, I understand that your family has quite the history here in Ramona. Can you give us a couple of highlights?
Yes. My family, they were farmers and dairymen, and later my dad and his six brothers and sisters became very attached to Ramona. They grew up here. My dad's brother became a very famous historical archaeologist and historian, and my dad moved on in the 1930s and became chief of police in Oceanside, where he finished his years.
Now, let's hear about the museum.
The primary purpose of the museum was to commemorate the old-timers in Ramona, and they came here, they began coming here in about 1870.
Now, Ken, I understand that when your father was putting this whole marvelous museum together with all these different buildings, that he got some help from somebody who had a lot of experience in stage set design. Tell us about that.
Yes, he was very fortunate. Mr. Bill Cowan had moved to Ramona, and he had retired, and Bill Cowan was actually worked for Walt Disney Studios, and he built sets and built towns for Walt Disney Studios. So when my dad got ready to begin building some of the old barns and everything, he was very glad to help.
Yeah, this really does look like you've been plopped down and reincarnated in the middle of the Old West here with all these wonderful buildings. The centerpiece of it is the Theophile Verlaki House.
Yes.
And that was built, I understand, in 1886?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the history of the house and how it came to be built.
Yes, Theophile Verlaki, he was a Basque from southern France. And at the time he left France in 1870 to come to the New World, to make his living. The whole Verlaki family came in to New Orleans, and then he found his way in 1870 to San Diego. And he became very prominent in San Diego. He built several businesses there, became one of the largest wine producers in San Diego.
Wow, so Ramona's wine industry has roots that go all the way back to the 1800s. Very interesting. And today it's certainly a thriving business up here. What can people see if they go into the Verlaki house today?
Well, I always tell people that they need to understand that everything they see here on this property has all been donated, mainly because the museum is a nonprofit organization. And when they go into that beautiful home, and it is all adobe, and they will find it beautifully furnished with all donated furniture, with all kinds of books in the library, with all kinds of furnishings in throughout.
And there's also a doctor's office. Tell us about that.
And there's a really interesting doctor's office. One of the bedrooms has been converted into a doctor's office. And that is, we have very old medical equipment that actually goes back to the 1800s that doctors have been donating to the museum. And it's really fascinating to see these old pieces of equipment.
There's also some very ornate furnishings. There's a fabulous antique grand piano in there, an old pump organ, a Victrola, and in one of the back bedrooms, I understand there's a bedroom set with an interesting history too, very ornate.
Yes, the bedroom set is brought in to the museum in 1980, and this lady came in and said, I'd like to donate this beautiful bedroom set. It was built in 1840 back in Connecticut, but she said, you need to know who I am. She said, first of all, I'm part of the Yale family, the producers of the Yale Lock Company, and my great-great-grandfather in 1840 was the person who put together the Yale Lock Company.
Now, there's a lot more than just a vintage home on this property, however. You have amassed an amazing collection of some of the original buildings here in Ramona. Folks, if you come out here to the museum, the Guy B. Woodward Museum, you can see a vintage schoolhouse, a blacksmith shop, a barn, buggies, all kinds of interesting buildings, covered wagon, and also a jail. Now, I understand there's a really colorful history behind that jail. Tell us about it.
The jail was actually built in San Diego about 1890, and the jail was brought up here, 7 tons of iron, brought up to Ramona, and installed as the Ramona Jail. And then it in the 1930s, it disappeared. And
so the jail was stolen?
No. The county of San Diego started using it for a dynamite storage, and it was found in a canyon and brought back to the museum.
I understand that your mother used to have a job related to the jail.
Actually, that was my grandmother. And my grandmother, back in the early, late 1800s, her job was to feed the prisoners. And she got 15 cents a day to bring them broth in.
And it has now been restored and brought back here to Ramona, and you can see it if you come out to visit the Guy B. Woodward Museum. Now, there's some other interesting buildings here. We're doing the interview actually sitting here in an old barn. What's the history of this?
Actually, it was one of my dad's ideas to bring in all of the old barns and all the old buildings that he could to the museum property. This barn was built in 1870. It was built by the Barnett family who came into Ramona from San Francisco area.
Looks like it's set up for meetings. Do you hold different kinds of meetings or events in here nowadays?
Yes. Every other month we have a potluck, and people are simply invited to bring something that they can share with everyone else. And we come in here and we have speakers on history and Ramona and things of this nature. It's really very good.
What fun. That's just an amazing resource to find. This place is a veritable treasure trove. As you walk through, you see antique dolls and vintage clothing and furnishings and tools. And there was a very interesting giant cook pot out there. Tell us about that.
The cook pot actually belonged to the Ortega family. And the Ortega family came to the valley in 1843. And they actually owned all 17,000 acres here in the valley.
So this was the family that received the land through the original Spanish land grant.
That's correct. And so the Ortegas proceeded to use the valley for farming all kinds of wheat and everything.
Now, of course, long before the original settlers came here, we had the Native Americans, the Kumeyaay people. I understand you have some Native American artifacts that people can see here as well.
Yes, the Kumeyaay Indians came to the valley 2,000 years ago, and we have some beautiful Indian artifacts, a whole display in the basement from that tribe.
Wow, I would love to take a look at that. And I understand, by the way, that the Kumeyaay now say they trace their history in the San Diego region back 10 to 12,000 years. Interesting, they recently found some artifacts in some other areas that suggest they may have been here even a lot longer than that. There are also a lot of interesting vehicles here. I see some vintage buggies, you know, like horse-drawn buggies, and what looks like a Conestoga wagon or covered wagon out there. What can you tell us about those?
Yes, the one large wagon that we have, it seats about 12 people, and it used to take all the people that came into Lakeside into Julian. It took 12 hours for that wagon to take 12 people from Lakeside to Julian.
My goodness, how times have changed. And the kids think they have it rough now. Now, when your father was first getting started and putting this all together, there was another benefactor from San Diego who came along. He was the owner of San Diego Trust and Savings. Can you give us some details?
Yes, Mr. Thomas W. Sefton stopped by to see my dad one time and introduced himself, and my dad took him all the way through the museum and told him what he intended to do, and Mr. Sefton said, "Guy, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to donate my mining equipment to the museum," which he did later on.
Yeah, and your father started this back in the 1980s or so, and then I understand that after he passed on and after Mr. Sefton passed on, the mantle kind of fell to you, and you came along and went downtown to retrieve all the mining equipment.
Yes, we were very fortunate because the Sefton family gave me a call one day, and they said, "Ken, I understand that our father promised to give you all of the mining equipment from the Colorado, California, Nevada gold mines." And I said, "Yes, he did." And they said, "Well, come down and get it."
What else did you find when you went down there?
First of all, they directed me to a warehouse next on Marina Boulevard, right next to the train tracks. And so I went down, knocked on the door, took a look, and the train tracks actually came into this large barn area, and Mr. Sefton's own personal railroad car was there.
What those very wealthy travelers used to use to go cross-country in the olden days. Now, he also donated some other interesting things. I see a tall ship replica down here. What else?
Well, in addition to the ship replica, it's difficult to believe, but he also donated the keys to Mount Vernon, George Washington's house. And that has always been a very interesting display.
Well, there you go. That's amazing. What else can people see that you would like people to know about the museum and the facilities here?
Well, the way the museum is put together, I think, is the most important, because all of a sudden the centerpiece is the Verlac House, built in 1886. You have a full-size basement, which is filled with beautiful artifacts. Then we have adorned on, my dad had brought in all of these buildings from the 1870s, and he reconstructed them here on the property. We're sitting in an old barn that was built in 1870.
It's amazing. It's really one of those little-known treasures we have out here in East County that I think a lot of people don't know about and would love to visit if they could. Now, speaking of visiting, when is the museum open to the public?
The museum is open to the public as advertised Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 1 to 4 o'clock. However, the museum is also open Monday through Thursday. We have one of our workers here, and they will open up the museum to anyone that desires to come in during the week.
Well, that's a good tip for our listeners here at East County Magazine. I know it's run by a nonprofit organization. So if people have maybe old artifacts out there from the Ramona area in their basements or attics, who would they get in touch with if they have something they may wish to donate?
They would get in touch with our main office here on the grounds and describe what they would like to donate to see if we can use it and see if it fits in. And that has been done. You'll be surprised at the number of artifacts that we have here that are local to Ramona.
Wonderful. So if you want to visit the museum, you can visit their website at www.woodwardmuseum.org. Ken, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I'm going to give you the last word here. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about the Woodward Museum or the history of Ramona?
Well, I think it's really interesting. We have people from all over the world going through this museum. People coming in to visit California, they hear about the museum, they come up and they get a wonderful trip through the museum.
And it's located right on Main Street here in the heart of downtown Ramona today. Ken, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you very much, and it's been a delight talking to you.
Three young people trapped in a burning car that flipped over after a crash in front of Monta Vista High School on Monday owe their lives to courageous bystanders. The car hit a traffic light just a quarter of a mile from a Cal Fire station in Spring Valley. As firefighters and paramedics approached the crash scene, they saw smoke and flames, and then witnessed an amazing sight. About 20 people were turning over the car, which had rolled onto its side. Bystanders then pulled the driver and two passengers to safety out of the burning vehicle. CAL FIRE Captain Kendall Bortiser said firefighters extinguished a blaze in the engine compartment, UT San Diego reports. The three occupants of the vehicle, all minors, were transported to a hospital with minor to moderate injuries. The California Highway Patrol is investigating the cause of the crash. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show,
Please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.